audiobook.com.
Hello once again, everybody. Thank you for joining me here on this Thursday, March 30th edition of Bang the Book Radio. My name is Adam Burke, your host for the next hour or so. We're going to cover all kinds of things in the world of sports from a betting focus. Glad to have you with me for what I like to call our Thursday meeting show. Two professional handicappers join us. The first is Brad Powers of BradPowersSports.com. The second, Ralph Michaels from WagerTalk.com. Obviously, we've got a lot to cover with those guys today. NIT championship game tonight between Georgia Tech and TCU. Couple of games on Friday, the CBI title game between Coastal Carolina and Wyoming, CIT title game between St. Peter's and Texas A&M Corpus Christi, and then we've got the Final Four coming up here on Saturday, South Carolina versus Gonzaga, Oregon versus North Carolina. We'll get thoughts from the guys on as many of those games as we possibly can. We'll also take a look at their college basketball week in review. You know, this is a question that I like to ask our handicappers to see if there's something they feel like they need to work on for next year. Something that maybe they want to try to incorporate a little bit more here as they go forward. So that'll be something that we'll talk about here on today's show as well. A couple of things before I bring Brad on the air. The first, if you missed it yesterday, I want to make this announcement again. Starting the second week of April, really, we're going to do Monday, Tuesday, Thursday shows. Monday will be our Monday mailbag and the Bettors Box. Thursday, also the Bettors Box on Tuesdays. I'm going to call this our Tuesday Takeover show. We're going to bring a rotating group of guests on, a lot of them probably some guys that you're very familiar with here from the show. Who knows, maybe we'll incorporate some new guests as well. But that's the plan as we go forward here throughout the summer months, looking just at Monday, Tuesday, Thursday. Like I said on yesterday's show, we may have some one-off stuff. Maybe we'll bring Sports Cheetah on for a Wednesday or Friday segment, something like that, to look at the NBA playoffs. But overall, this is the format that we're going to look to go with. Like I said yesterday, I don't want to just be throwing random stuff out there when you're not expecting it. You know, if it pops up, maybe you consider it a nice little present. If it pops up and you're not really expecting it, maybe you don't get to it. So if we give you an idea of what the schedule is going to look like, you'll know when to look for certain things, when to look for the MLB stuff if you want that, or the Tuesday show where we'll just kind of rotate a lot of topics as we move here throughout the summer months. But again, Monday, Tuesday, Thursday for sure each week, and then we'll see what happens from there. Like I said, I'll probably take a little bit of a break there in August, and then, of course, the All-Star break for Major League Baseball in July. Just nothing going on, so we won't have any content that day. And then in August, like I said, I'm getting married, so we'll probably have to skip a couple of shows there from that standpoint. No honeymoon for us, though. College football season's coming around. Told her, sorry, babe, we can't do that, so we're going to try and do something here at a different point throughout the year. But in any event, I just wanted to let our listeners know once again. Of course, I'll remind you of this again on tomorrow's show, and then as we go into next week as well. The reason it doesn't technically start next week is because we'll have Kyle Hunter on to help us break down the national championship game next Monday following our Monday mailbag segment. So, we'll try to start this here probably. It'll be for the first week of April, but we won't have the Bettors Box format on Monday. It'll just be Thursday of next week, and we'll probably chat with Brian Leonard since he's the guy that's most into baseball among our recurring guests on Tuesday's show. So that'll give you some kind of idea on what we're looking for here as we go forward. A couple of other things I want to mention. I mentioned these yesterday on the show. I'll keep mentioning them. In April, over at bangthebook.com, three free contests going on over at the site. All you have to do is sign up for an account at Bang the Book. We'll occasionally send you a newsletter with some of our content, something like that, but we're not going to inundate you with emails from signing up or anything. Now, if you want, you can also set yourself up to get some notifications over on the website. I generally send out the notifications when I post the radio show recap article and then also the situational betting articles that I put out on Sundays. There's only one NHL one left of those. And then one NBA one, I'll just carry it over to cover the final couple of days of the NBA regular season. But I send out some push notifications for those. So if you do subscribe to our notifications on the site, you get those that pop up in the corner of your browser. It's not really a big deal. But as far as these three contests go, we're going to have a daily streaker contest. Obviously, you know what that is. You're going to keep your clothes on for that, though, in all likelihood. But you're going to try to pick winners day after day after day. Prizes for these things, too. So keep that in mind. Monthly pick of the day, the top three will get paid for that. And then a monthly pick tracker, you get prizes for the top ROI, top win percentage, units won. And the nice thing is, if you go over to bangthebook.com, you sign up for the site, you become part of these contests, You'll also have access. Well, you have access anyway, but you get access over at the website to all of our matchup data, all kinds of trends. We have a big time database of trends. We have some power lines that are set up in, you know, the back behind the curtain, so to speak, at bangthebook.com to give you an idea. If we feel like there's an overlay against what the Las Vegas line or the offshore line is. So there's a lot of really good stuff over there at bangthebook.com for you to take advantage of. And you know, maybe it's some things that will help you out for these three contests. So again, daily streaker, monthly pick of the day, and then the monthly pick tracker, where over a larger sample size, we'll give out some prizes for those that do really well. So that's going on over there at bangthebook.com, along with a lot of other really great things. You know about my MLB season win total previews. Those are available over there. American League and National League Cy Young Award odds. I gave some thoughts on some of the pitchers I think are worth a value play. And that's another thing I really like about the work that I do over there in terms of stuff like that. It's very easy to sit there and say, hey, take Chris Sale, take Corey Kluber, take Clayton Kershaw. No shit. Of course you want to look at those three guys. But I look for the values. I look for the guys where it's a worthwhile investment for you to tie up your funds for about 6 months or so, because that's what it's going to take to decide a winner on some of these prop bets. So that's the way that I like to approach it, the way that I like to go about it. And, you know, hey, when you're playing plus 1,800 futures all the time or plus 1,200 or, you know, even higher than that, yeah, you're probably not going to hit too many of those, but you're going to put yourself in a position where when you do hit one, it's going to make it worth your while to have those resources tied up for about 6 months. So that's the approach that I took with those. But then we also cover day-to-day sports events. We'll have some baseball game previews. We'll obviously have previews throughout the NBA and NHL playoffs. I'll do some NHL playoff stuff in terms of looking at series prices. I like to break those down for you. So we'll have a lot of good things coming your way in the month of April over there at the website, including these contests. I cover golf and NASCAR over there at bangthebook.com as well. Actually put up my preview for the STP 500 here this morning. So plenty of content, plenty of things for you to keep an eye on over there at bangthebook.com. A couple of other things I want to mention here on today's show. And, you know, some of them are about looking for information, knowing the right places to look. I follow 924 people on Twitter, so I get a lot of write-ups about different types of things. There's been some really, really fantastic stuff written here recently. The one that I want to bring to your attention here today from Mike Petrello over at MLB.com. Now, he works in the StatCast division for them. It's an article. I actually had a listener question about this a couple of weeks ago, and I was trying to find that question and tweet this link over to him for this article. But it was about why we've seen such a big increase in home runs over the last 2 years. And it was a really, really fascinating piece to look at. He asked about 50 different players for their thoughts on three different questions. It was fascinating to me to see the contrast between the guys that, you know, do look at the sabermetric stuff, look at the StatCast stuff, and other guys that are just more old school, you know, the guys that were talking about, you know, well, I didn't really change anything. You know, I did this little thing with my approach, something like that. Whereas you have some other guys who are like, well, I was looking at exit velocity data and, you know, I try to improve on my launch angle. It was just really fascinating to look at the dichotomy between the two sides in Major League Baseball. So if you get a chance to read that Petrello article, I retweeted it on my timeline. I think that's something that's very much worth your while to check out. And also keep in mind here too, that when you start to get some of these trends, so to speak, in professional sports, it affects the way that you handicap. You know, there are a lot more home runs now. So do you start looking at overs a little bit more? You know, do you start downgrading pitchers that give up a lot of home runs when they go to hitters parks? Keep in mind too, some of the ballparks out there around the league, Miami, down in Miami there, Marlins Park, Citi Field in New York, Petco Park in San Diego. You know, we've seen where they've moved in the fences a little bit here as well. All of those park factor things are things that you want to keep in mind. If you got pitchers that are giving up a lot of home runs, it's not like that trend is probably going to stop with a league-wide increase in hitting dingers. So those are all things that you have to adjust to from a handicapping standpoint and things that you want to make sure that you're incorporating into your research, into your breakdowns, all that type of stuff, because it's very, very important for you to, you know, put yourself in a position to have all that information in front of you. Make sure that you're making the smartest wagers possible. And I talked about this a little bit here on yesterday's show, I think it was, and I actually saw a stat about this I'm going to see if I can pull it up while I'm talking here. But it was very interesting to see that there's been a significant increase in the Major League Baseball betting handle. And actually, David Purdom tweeted this out. He quote tweeted it from the American Gaming Association, where projections are that $36 billion will be wagered on baseball this season. Purdom said in his quoted tweet that a record $1 billion was bet on baseball in 2016 in Nevada, a 16% increase from 2015. So that's something that I talked about a little bit. As you know, I think that since we're getting a smarter, more analytically based public betting scene, they're finding value in baseball. They want to bet baseball. Maybe it's just an action junkie thing. Maybe that's what it is. You know, I mean, a lot of people are, they have money burning a hole in their virtual bankroll and they want to go out there and play it. But I also think that with the advancements in advanced statistics, that you're just seeing more odds, seeing more edges, more opportunities to get out there and make some money betting on baseball. So I thought that was a really interesting statistic that Purdom had there, that you know, a 16% increase in baseball betting from 2015 to 2016 out there at the brick and mortars in Nevada. And I think that we could certainly see that number go up even a little bit more here this season. So without further ado, we'll bring on today's first guest. That is Mr. Brad Powers of BradPowersSports.com. Bradley, what's happening today, buddy? How are you?
Hey, not too bad. I apologize for being 10 minutes late. Totally lost track of time.
Not a problem. It's all right. I know you got a lot of things going on, particularly in terms of your college football preparations. And before we dig into the college basketball stuff, I know you sent over a link to me earlier in the week here about some of the things you're doing with college football spring games.
Yeah, you know, what I do, it's an intriguing thing. It's kind of a, you know, kind of a pull behind the curtain as far as how to treat spring games. I know a lot of people, you know, the national pundits, you can't get anything out of a spring game. I'm not necessarily looking for, you know, how good a particular team looks. What I like to break down is individual position groups as far as depth, and obviously looking for some overlooked players that might be stepping to the forefront that a lot of people in the, particularly the betting markets, might not know about. So I'm looking at individual players and position groups. And, you know, let's be honest, a lot of times the announcers, you know, whenever they're covering a game, particularly in a spring game, they kind of get, you know, an inside look to the team. They get to interview the coaches and stuff. And a lot of times they can get you extra little nuggets and information about the team that, again, the general public's not going to know about, and obviously the betting market's not going to know about. So it's up there as far as some notes. You know, I did the Colorado spring game, and I'll post that on the website, that link that I sent to you as far as the notes. But it's kind of a thing that, you know, I do for about 40 of the 50 spring games that are televised. And I also give a little bit of actionable advice that I think is going to be pertinent to the upcoming season, whether it be, you know, hey, this team's going to be much better, from my opinion. Maybe it's total information, with particularly with Colorado. I was thinking, you know, from what I saw, I'd be looking to bet more overs with them. So I do give you some actionable advice from after watching the spring games.
Well, and I think the best place to get that is over on Brad's Twitter timeline, at Brad Powers in the number 7, and he'll be following along with that stuff as we go through the spring, and then, of course, hitting it real hard in the summer months with, actually, I guess win totals are out in the spring now, with Chris Andrews probably doing those in late April this year. Then also we've got Golden Nugget Week 1 lines, games of the year are going to be coming out very, very soon. You know, it seems like once we shut the door on college basketball with some of the odds makers that are out there now, it basically just flips right over to college football.
Yeah, I mean, for a lot of people now, there's the individual groups. I mean, there's your pro guys you know, move from the pro sports, from the NFL, the NBA to Major League Baseball. And obviously, I mean, you got your NBA playoffs. That's a season in itself. But, you know, as far as my time, since I don't do baseball, and I give all the credit to you, a guy who loves the sport of baseball, it's an incredible grind. And, you know, if you know what you're doing as far as a money line sport, it can be quite profitable, because it's a type of sport that's, you know, made there for the sharper players, not necessarily there for the public to make a killing on. But if you're willing to put in the time, you can do that. But, yeah, I would say – now, all my time, I would say 25-30% of it goes to the NBA playoffs. I mean, let's face it, when you're only dealing with a couple games a night, it doesn't take 8 to 10 hours a day to break down a couple games a night, particularly when the lines are relatively sharp. So yeah, all my time goes to it, and what I do, and let's be honest right now with the timeline, we're getting to April 1st, and if you're just deep diving one team a day, well, there's 130 teams in college football right now. That's you do the math, that's over 4 months. If you start on April 1st doing one team a day, that's taking into August. So yeah, I mean, the timeline is there for you to really start diving in when it comes to college football. If you're someone like me that wants to know about each and every one of the 130 teams.
All right, let's get into this college basketball stuff here. We've got five games to go this week, one game next weekend, or one game next week, I should say, on Monday night, and somebody will cut down the nets and signal the end of the college basketball season at that point. Speaking of net cutting, we're going to have some tonight at Madison Square Garden. Georgia Tech takes on TCU. TCU, a 4-point favorite in the NIT championship game. You've really been following the NIT a whole lot. I know there were some rule changes that were going to have an effect on some of these games, on some of these totals. Is this an event that you're interested in tonight?
Oh, absolutely. I follow smaller tournaments. A lot of times I find more, advantageous lines in the smaller tournaments. So, no, I'm a big fan of the NIT. It started, I think, the first night of the NIT. I think I had one of my strongest plays in the entire March Madness season. It was your classic NIT matchup. You had Georgia Tech very excited to be there. You had Indiana, even though they're the higher-rated seed, should have been, having a home game. They didn't want to be there. Obviously, they would end up firing their coach, but they wanted no business playing in the NIT. They traded in a home game for a road game. Georgia Tech was an underdog in the game. It doesn't get any easier than that. And that's, why a lot of times I find value in the NIT. You know, it kind of hurt this year. I mean, it's been, an upset tournament as far as the lower seeds, dominating. But I think you got a great matchup tonight between Georgia Tech, TCU, two up-and-coming programs. You look at Jamie Dixon going back to his alma mater, he's done a great job at TCU. And they're going to be a strong team next year. I mean, this is a freshman, sophomore-dominated team. And you can't say enough on the other side about the job that Josh Pastner did. I mean, he was pretty much panned as a failure at Memphis, a guy that can recruit but couldn't coach. The expectation for Georgia Tech coming into the season, I mean, they were picked 14th out of 15 teams in the ACC. A lot of people thought they'd maybe win one or two conference games. They start off the ACC season with a win over North Carolina. Away they go. They win 8 conference games. They've been straight up money in this tournament. I mean, 4-0 against the spread in the NIT, average cover by 12 points per game. They're 10-2 against the spread their last 12. I think they have a significant large edge on defense in this game. Obviously, TCU's got the edge on offense. But give me that defensive dog in this regard here. I like what I've seen from Georgia Tech. They've been good to me throughout this run, not only in the NIT, but also the last half of the ACC conference season. I've been on them a lot. I'll ride them tonight. Give me Georgia Tech plus the.
So I want to look at this game on Friday night here in the CBI between Coastal Carolina and Wyoming. And I want to walk back to something you said there about that Georgia Tech-Indiana game and how easy it looked. For me, I don't think there was an easier bet in college basketball this year than playing Wyoming -2.5 in the CBI on Wednesday night. They were up 6 at the break. The number went from about 7.5 to 8.5, went back down to 7.5 right before tip-off. So the second half line with Wyoming leading by 6 was 2.5, basically to mirror the full game line. And, man, I'm so mad at myself. I wasn't around the computer for that at the time. Wyoming won the second half by 18 points. They blow them out by 24. And this was your classic altitude type of play. And also another angle involved in this game is that Coastal won game one. So they knew that they had game three here in this best of three CBI championship format. There's nothing more frustrating than missing out on a winner like that when everything lines up for you. Now you get Friday night's game. The opening number right now is starting to pop out there at a couple of offshores. Wyoming's still just -8.5. I'm pretty interested in your thoughts on that game.
Yeah, I mean, look, hindsight's always 20/20, and when you got a dominating score and you had a relatively, handicapping 101 going from sea level to elevation, must-win situation, you saw the line go from like 7 to 9, you saw the money in there, and when you see the result, yeah, it's easy to say, man, I should have went huge on that. And then you also look at, Coastal Carolina dealing with some injuries. Beck's got injured. A couple of their players got injured for them. I think they could be missing maybe 3 players. So a banged up team looking at Coastal Carolina. Now, looking at the first game, I mean, If you break down the box score, I mean, Coastal Carolina, you know, won by 10 in game one and easily could have won by more, despite the fact they missed 11 free throws. I mean, Wyoming hit 13 threes in that game. So, I mean, Coastal Carolina was not only better, but much better than Wyoming in game one. So I understood if anyone kind of was on the Coastal Carolina side on that spread. But, you know, handicapping 101, moving across the country to the elevation. And here's the thing with elevation. A lot of times, you know, maybe your Joe Public guy, oh, they're used to the elevation. Well, no, sometimes it actually has an ill effect. That the longer you stay in that elevation hurts you, and especially if Coastal Carolina is going to be a little depth shy here without three key players in this one. If I got involved, now I'll say this. I mean, the team's obviously very familiar with one another at this point, playing three times in the course of 5 days. I'm not a big guy who wants to lay eight and a half or nine, but to be honest with you, if you gave me, you know, $20 and asked me what's the expectation for this one, are we going to see something like we saw in game one with Coastal Carolina controlling matters or something like game two, I think probably a more continuation of game two would be the higher probability in my opinion.
All right, let's get to Saturday here. The Final Four will begin with South Carolina Gonzaga. One of the things I've talked about with our handicapping guests here throughout the show is that this number a month or so ago would look significantly different than it looks now, with Gonzaga 6.5-point favorite, extra juice mostly on the Gonzaga side. And something I really want listeners to look at here, at the Chris Books, DSI and Bookmaker, so Gonzaga's -115 there on the 6.5, over at Pinnacle -114. So extra juice at the sharper books, Bovada's got South Carolina +6.5, -115. Looks like a bit of a sharp public split here on this game, Brad.
Yeah, obviously, if you're an experienced bettor, you broke it down eloquently. The sharper books to look at compared to the more square books. You know, I'll be honest with you, I don't know if I'm going to get too involved with the side in this one. You're exactly right, Gonzaga. If this game is played 3-4 weeks ago, keep in mind, entering the NCAA tournament, South Carolina was 1-9 against the spread their last 10 games. Obviously, the SEC teams were very familiar with their kind of attacking style of defense. They caught on to that. The teams they faced so far in the NCAA tournament have not handled it appropriately. With that being said, you know, Gonzaga hasn't overwhelmed me. Obviously, they looked very good in the Xavier game in the Elite Eight. But outside of that, I thought three relatively subpar performances. Now, defensively wise, and this is where I'm going to get to my play, I've been very impressed with Gonzaga. Obviously, as far as field goal percentage defense, they've had the number one defense in the NCAA tournament. You look at efficiency ratings, you got the top two defenses in the entire country. Gonzaga's one, South Carolina's two. Maybe people, when you think Gonzaga, South Carolina, they're not thinking great defense. Well, I can tell you this, it's elite defense. And I don't know if it's being properly priced into the number, because you look at South Carolina games, the last couple of totals at Madison Square Garden were sitting there in the 135, 136 range. And even though they're playing a better defense here, you got a couple more points on the total. I think there's a classic overreaction to South Carolina's recent offensive explosion. I mean, let's face it, general betting public, they started following South Carolina basketball probably in the NCAA tournament. They were watching this team throughout the course of the season. And what they've seen South Carolina score 93 points against Marquette. They've seen them score 65 points in a single half against Duke. That's the most ever by any team against a Coach K Duke-led team in a single half. And the reality is, Adam, I mean, this is a below-average offense when you're considering the company that they're in as far as Final Four caliber teams. Last 15 national champs, average offensive efficiency rank is 7.5. That means they've been in the top 10 in the country. Their other three teams in the Final Four all have, you know, top 20 offensive efficiency teams. So this is a well below average South Carolina offense. Classic overreaction to recency bias. Just their last four games, they're averaging 10 points more per game than what they were throughout the first 32 games of the season. I say the full season stats matter more than the last 3-4 games. Give me Gonzaga to be able to handle their pressure, because they faced West Virginia just a couple rounds ago, so they're going to be better adapt to that. So I don't think any easy buckets for South Carolina. Add it all up, and, you know, probably my favorite play in the Final Four right now is South Carolina Gonzaga under 138.5.
Well, of course, this game also played in a very cavernous football stadium, which, you know, will certainly change the shooting backdrops a little bit as well. I do want to ask you about this. This is something we kind of talked about heading into the Sweet 16, and it's, you know, sort of we can expand on a little bit more here in terms of the Final Four with all the fanfare that goes on with this event. There's a learning curve here to handling all of these media responsibilities that you have. It's kind of like what we talked about with regards to the Super Bowl, where New England been there, done that. They were used to all those distractions. Atlanta, they weren't. You know, that was new territory for them. Dan Quinn was, but for the most part, all the players, you know, going through this for the first time of everybody and their brother wanting tickets, all these media responsibilities, so on and so forth. Neither one of these teams has been to this point. Mark Few in the Final Four for the first time. Obviously, South Carolina basketball has really had nothing to show for itself for the last decade since they won a couple of NITs in the mid-2000s. Any of that a worry for you here in this game?
You know, I think it evens itself out. I mean, I think Gonzaga would be better able to handle it just because, I mean, they've been close. They've been on the cusp. They've had, you know, several Elite Eight runs, Sweet 16 runs. I mean, it's been 20 straight years as far as them making the NCAA tournament. But obviously, they never made it to the third weekend of the tournament. Not a major factor for me. It will be more of a factor when we get to the second game because we do have a large disparity there. But I think for the most part, it equals itself out, Adam.
All right, well, let's go to the second game here. Oregon, North Carolina. North Carolina, 5-point favorite. Looks like you're paying a little bit of extra juice if you want to take Oregon at the 5. Most shops sitting 5 minus 15. Pinnacle still hanging that 4.5 out there. They're trying desperately to hold on to that hook. In terms of this game here, you know, you have two very, very talented teams loaded with great players, two pretty experienced head coaches, although Roy Williams has been to the Final Four a lot and Dana Altman never has. What's the biggest key for you in this game?
Well, I think it's going to be the Oregon front court. You know, they've lost Boucher. It's well noted, one of their best shot blockers, a 6'10", 6'11 guy that, you know, obviously affected lane on defense and also had the unique ability to shoot threes on the offensive end. It hasn't been, impacted them yet, and maybe they got underrated in the markets because they thought it was going to be such a big loss. But I'll say this. I mean, you look at their opponents so far, Rhode Island, Michigan, Kansas, very guard-centric teams. Well, now they probably play the team with the best front court in the entire country. And when you look at Meeks and Hicks and North Carolina's number one offensive rebounding, the number one rebounding team in the country, I think down low, I mean, if you look at Bell, and they're pretty depth shy down low, if he can't handle it and he gets into early foul trouble, that would not be a good sign. I'm probably looking more towards when you're looking at the side or total here, in-game live betting. I mean, if Bell picks up that quick second foul, it's not going to be a good look for Oregon. Obviously, you know, the big factor here, experience. North Carolina, you know, I had three starters from last year's national championship team. The national championship game participant team came one shot away from winning the national championship. They're back here. I mean, look at Roy Williams, who's coached 520 minutes in Final Four games. Dana Altman, a great coach, but coaching his very first Final Four game. So experience edge in North Carolina, a massive edge there. It's probably building in the number with them 5. I think my pure power ratings would have North Carolina probably favored by 3.5 here. But I think the injury to Boucher might finally catch up to Oregon a little bit. But there's also a concern for me, you know, the health status of Joel Berry for North Carolina. I mean, he's got a couple of – he's injured both ankles here in recent weeks. And as he goes, so does North Carolina. If you go back to the Duke game in the ACC tournament, I mean, when they were up big and when they started to blow that big lead against Duke, it's when he caught his fourth foul there. And obviously he went through a slump there where he's like 3 out of 21 shooting. And that's when North Carolina wasn't looking that great against Arkansas and everything. If he's 100%, I think North Carolina can possibly run away with this. If he's bum and they can't run it up and down the floor like they want to, then I think this is a very tight matchup and goes to the end. This is one where I don't know if I'm going to have a bet prior to tip time, to be honest with you, Adam. I think I'm going to in-game live wager, which is obviously advantageous when you live in Vegas. One of the reasons why I moved here, I can bet on the app and do the in-game live wagering. But a key factor for me, man, if Bell picks up that second foul, I'm going to start up looking to play North Carolina just because of the vast experienced edge and also the depth edge that North Carolina has in the front court.
I'm going to mention something real quickly. I wrote up a pretty long piece yesterday at bangthebook.com about live betting and some strategies and do's and don'ts for that type of thing. And one of the things I did mention is that, you know, a lot of it is done mathematically based on the score, based on how much time's left, this and that. But if a guy like Bell picks up a second foul and he's got to sit for 8, 10, you know, minutes of that first half, that's something that the odds makers that are in the live betting department probably aren't going to account for as much as they should. So I do like what you said there, Brad, about that, about going at it from that angle. I do want to ask you this. I know you talked about Oregon being the team that you liked to win the national championship when they were heading into the Pac-12 tournament, and you isolated them much, much earlier than that. Do you have a futures play on Oregon? And if so, how are you looking to hedge it this weekend?
I had an opportunity to buy 45-1 Oregon ticket, and I don't have any. That was the best odds that were available, and it was going to be sold to me, and I passed on it because that's right when Boucher got hurt. I have a couple of futures tickets with them right around the 20-25-1. As far as hedging, yeah, I'm going to hedge a little bit. Obviously, you have to. I mean, they're a five. I don't have a strong case for them against the spread in this game. I'm kind of neutral when it comes to the side, at least at this point. So the fact that I don't have a strong case for them to bet them plus 5 points in this game, obviously I'm going to do a little bit of hedging. I don't have a big bet on it. I would have had an opportunity to have a 45-1 at $100 at that point. Then I would be thinking about hedging a lot more significantly and betting strategy. But yeah, I mean, if anyone out there has an Oregon ticket, you know, when you're dealing a 5-point dog and you're playing, you know, North Carolina, I think this is your time. Unless you really strongly think that they're going to beat North Carolina, I think you hedge a little bit here. You don't obviously don't hedge the whole way, in my opinion, but I think you protect. Look, you're sitting pretty at this one. You're way ahead of the lines and the line movements as far as Oregon from a futures aspect. It's okay to cash a little bit on that, at least try to by hedging. But unfortunately, and it was a joke on another program, it was offered to me on air, and I passed on it because of the Boucher injury. Shame on me for that.
Well, last thing I want to ask you about here, Brad, for this week's segment, and again, since we're changing over formats, we won't have Brad on each week. We'll try to get him on a little bit here as we go throughout the spring and summer on that Tuesday Takeover show. But Brad, as we wrap up the college basketball season here, and you know what's coming since I've asked you this question before in other sports, in terms of evaluating your performance, is something you feel like in the future you need to focus on a little bit more, maybe something you started using that you're going to try to use a little bit more frequently as you go forward? What can you tell us about something like that?
That's a great question. I'll say this. I found a trend, and I'm always self-scouting, just like, you know, your football teams and any organization. Hey, what am I doing wrong? And I love the fact that you bring this up, Adam. And, again, this is one of my favorite shows to do. And, again, I apologize to the listeners for being a little late today. But, you know, one thing that I found, and I got to do a better job of, you know, I'm a football guy first. We talked about it on this air about me, you know, not doing too much basketball stuff until the month of January. I'm starting to see that that's a little bit of a mistake, and I'm doing my customers a little bit of a disservice and a disjustice, because it's been 3 consecutive years where I've really struggled in college hoops, and I guess necessarily so if you're just jumping in feet first when you haven't done a lot of homework in January and February. But, you know, with me, and I do, for those that don't know me personally, I do have kind of a photographic memory. I get better. I'm a grinder, a daily grinder. And each 3 years, at least each of the last 3 years that I've been doing it, it's taken on exactly the same format. I mean, very poor performance in January and maybe the first week or two in February. Picks up to be about average in February. And then March comes around, and I've had 3 great, and this one's probably been the best tournament for me as far as March Madness from a pick aspect and picking winners. I don't know if that's a trend that I'm starting to finally know the teams, or if I don't know if it's the fact, Adam, that, you know, the general public jumps in March, and I find value because I'm a contrarian guy where, you know, the only people really betting college basketball in January and early February are sharp people that probably been following it back to November and probably did some preseason homework. So I got to analyze and myself as far as my hours in the months of, you know, late October and November, and see if I can, you know, shade in 4 or 5 hours a week to get me adjusted to college basketball a little bit. So therefore I'm not coming in real cold on January, because I know that, you know how the business is, Adam. You know, if you don't win early and you're a consistent loser, a lot of the people don't understand bankroll management, and they give up on you in February, when the reality is, you know, after my performance in March, we're going to have another winning basketball season. But a lot of my guys were fed up with me after the month of January that they probably, you know, gave up hope. So and that's one thing that I've taken away now. This has been 3 consecutive years, and I got to do a better job hitting the ground running in January instead of just putting it off to the side and just focusing on football.
Great stuff on today's show from Brad Powers at bradpowersports.com. Brad, what's going on over at the website right now?
Yeah, obviously, if you're interested in some free picks as far as the Final Four, got one up there. I'll just be honest with you. Free pick is South Carolina Gonzaga under the total, under 138.5 if you're interested in that. Obviously, I've actually updated my spring football guide, released it about 3-4 weeks ago. I updated it with some updated information. I got my first max bet of the college football season on there, my exact ticket, and that line's moved already 4 points. So, yeah, if you want to check that ticket out, that's available in the spring football betting guide. I got everything you need to know as far as covering you for college football, getting you ready for the 2017 season with early futures value bets, sleeper picks, Heisman sleeper picks, all the schedules, early power ratings, early top 10, you name it, I got it, and it's available for free, bradpowersports.com. And also, you can follow me on Twitter, at @BradPowers7.
Brad, it's been a joy here throughout the college football and the college basketball seasons. Like I said, we'll find spots to get you on here over the spring and summer. But, you know, my heartfelt and sincere thanks to you for doing this show every week. I really, really appreciate it, and good luck with everything the rest of the way.
Hey, right back at you, and I appreciate you, and I appreciate the friendship, Adam. Keep going, Adam, and getting them loving, and I'll be listening to the show on a daily basis.
All right, there you go. There's Brad Powers from bradpowersports.com. One quick thing I want to mention here before we bring Ralph Michaels on the show. You know it. I tell you all the time. Two great promo code options available over at DSI Sportsbook. The first, the BTB Radio promo code, good for a $10 test drive free bet simply for signing up, an additional 50 to 100% deposit bonus based on the amount of your initial deposit. The other, the Bang 200 promo code, 100% for the sportsbook, 100% for the live casino. Maybe find yourself a new sportsbook so that you can familiarize yourself a little bit with it as we head closer to the football season, but also so that you can shop around for the best numbers there in Major League Baseball. Moneyline sport, very, very fluid market. You want to be able to jump on the best prices that you possibly can. Sometimes that price is going to be at DSI. So if you don't have an account over there, I certainly recommend that. One more segment left to go here for this Thursday meeting show. That is with Mr. Ralph Michaels from WagerTalk.com. Ralph, how's it going today, my friend?
Adam, it's going wonderful. Thank you.
Well, we got plenty of stuff to get to here on today's segment. The first thing I want to start with here is a missed opportunity. I talked about this a little bit with Brad at the top of the show. I hope you were able to jump in on this one last night with Coastal Carolina and Wyoming. Again, we go from school to altitude. It seems like it's so easy, but the way Coastal played in the first game looked like they could be the better team here in this three-game series. Wyoming just blows them out in the second half.
Well, let me tell you, I actually went a little contrarian. And, you know, while Wyoming won that game in a blowout, it had more to do with Coastal's injuries. Coastal lost two players in that opening game. A starter who started 36 games, Ray Cry, and he was one of their starting guards who averaged 10 points per game. And a second guy had got hurt who came in and tried to play last night but only had 7 points. So I'm not going to give that much credit to the altitude. Now, my point is this. While Coastal Carolina had to fly up to altitude, Wyoming actually had to make the 1,800-mile trek out to Coastal Carolina and then make the return flight. They actually had two flights, which made it more difficult. So I'm not ready to give all that credit to them, but with the injuries and the situation that happened, Coastal missed another 9 free throws last night. They missed 11 their first game, so that's been their demise, and Wyoming just pulled away. But again, Coastal is a team that lost one of their starting point guards 20 games into the season, then lost their second guard in that first game, and then lost another forward in the game. So I think it has a little more to do with attrition than giving all that credit to the altitude. But I agree. I mean, the altitude is a big deal. I think we're going to see the altitude affect them even more, being up there playing that first game and then being there for a day of rest and a shoot around and then playing again tomorrow night.
So what really pisses me off about what I missed in the second half of that game last night is that with this unique best of three format, Coastal's coaches know, hey, we got to play in the highest elevation that we're going to play in probably ever again 2 days later. So once they get down in the first half of that game, you know, and then things don't start out very well in the second half, there's really no incentive to keep going. I mean, that's where you see the blowout taking shape. So I'm kind of curious to get your take on this line for Friday night here. All the offshores have popped a number on this game while we've been recording today. with Wyoming minus 8.5. Looks like there's no adjustment for the coastal injuries, no adjustment really for the back-to-back in altitude, because this number actually peaked at 8.5 before we got what I think is a little bit of public buyback on coastal late in that right before tip-off. Are you surprised by this 8.5 line that came out?
I am, because it basically was, you know, it was 7.5 in the opener yesterday, and then it climbed to 8.5, and it was 8.5 most of the day. You know, now Coastal did make, as you said, there was a blowout in the process. Coastal played seven people. Their normal rotation is seven deep. In the first game, they played eight only because of the two injuries they had. Last night, they went to 10 people. So he said, I'm going to play extra guys. I want to keep their legs fresh. I want everyone to get a taste of this altitude. So he actually expanded the roster himself, getting two or three people in that normally don't play just to give some of his guys rest. And as you said, that's something that's unique to this situation only. When you see that blowout and you have nothing to play for and you know you're going to face this team two days down the road, you just don't want to show them anything, and you don't mind tanking a game. So in-live betting is a perfect situation for that. But I am surprised there's no adjustment. Again, you know, remember, how many people know Coastal had two people injured that first game? It wasn't on the major injury reports. If you dug into it, you certainly realized it. But they're basing it on that late buyback where they actually closed it at 6.5 or 7 last night. So they post it where they think they're going to get money on both sides and let it play out.
I'm going to be really interested to see what happens with this number as people start realizing it's there. I mean, a lot of the influential groups right now looking at today's NBA card, you know, looking for the NHL announcements about goaltenders and all that. I think when we start to see, you know, this number get some more play, I'll be very curious to see what happens with it. I don't know if it'll get high enough to have a reasonable middle, and certainly middles with 9-10 points, probably not the greatest idea. But I got to think that this number goes up on Wyoming, right?
Oh, I agree with you. I think if you want Wyoming, you play it now, and if you want Coastal, you wait. I completely agree. And as you said, as we're taping Thursday, you got to remember there's a pretty good NIT game on tonight as well. So college basketball is focused over at Madison Square Garden and on an ESPN game. But, you know, the thing you got to remember, though, is while Coastal Carolina might have tanked and play 10 people, when you're in your last game of the season, you're playing those seven guys till they fall down and die. So, you know, you're going to have a different fight for that team the last 8 minutes of the game, which you didn't have last night. So put that in perspective as well.
Well, that'll be definitely an interesting game to follow. And again, I've talked about this already once or twice before on this show this week. That's what I love about this industry. What keeps me coming back is the chase and being able to break down these games, especially when we have unique situations like a best of three CBI, where you've got a team that plays at like 30 feet above sea level and that one that plays over 8,000 feet above sea level. So I definitely really enjoy, you know, looking at that type of thing. All right. So let's talk the NIT. I know you wanted to mention this one, Georgia Tech, TCU laying 4 right now, NIT title on the line.
You know, both of these teams, while I don't bracket out the NIT, you know, we talked about it early. Who's excited to be the NIT? Who has those first-year hungry head coaches that can talk a program into wanting to get there? And this is the perfect example of why these two teams are here. You have young, aggressive first-year head coaches trying to turn around programs and make them significant for future years, playing in power conferences that play tough schedules. So it's the perfect recipe on why these two teams got here. I personally like the under in this game. I love Georgia Tech's defense. You know, it's something a different type of defense a little bit with the way the guards come out and cover you. And at 133, you know, you have that Madison Square Garden effect. And yes, they did play there two nights ago, but I think it adds to it. I think both of these teams, you know, Georgia Tech allows 66 points per game, TCU in that 70 range, but those are against some very good offenses, which Georgia Tech is not. So clearly my play tonight is on the under between the Yellow Jackets and the Horned Frogs.
One thing I want to mention real quickly here, Laramie is actually over 7,000 feet altitude, not 8,000. So I didn't want to misspeak there with what I said about that CBI game. But with this NIT game, you know, I think what's really interesting about this tournament, the NIT, is that, you had all the motivation things that we talked about throughout the first round, and to some extent, maybe there's a little bit of motivation in the second round as well. You know, you go out and win a game at home. You want to play in front of your school, play in front of your friends and your family if they're there. Then maybe you go out on the road for the second game, and you're like, you know what? We got to win. We didn't embarrass ourselves like some of these teams do. I think we're good with that. When you get to this point, obviously, you know, you want to win. You can take some hardware home, and that's what both of these teams are looking for. And these are two teams that don't take a whole lot of hardware home, as you said. You've got Josh Pastner, who's done a phenomenal job at Texas, or at Georgia Tech, excuse me, coming over from Memphis. Jamie Dixon goes from Pitt to TCU, where he's kind of looking to rebuild a program. Do you feel like there's a coaching edge in this game?
You know, I don't have one in my mind. You know, off the top of my head, I would give it to Dixon. Just because he's made it, you know, he's been in that winning program a little more. But, you know, I don't have an answer for that where I'm going to say, yes, one coach has a definite edge. You know, the one thing that you got to remember about TCU is they changed styles so much. So when you change styles, you know, Pittsburgh sees that same thing now going from Dixon's very slow, methodical tempo to an up-tempo team, how they struggled. And the same happens to TCU. They change styles with Dixon, so you expect them to improve throughout the year. That's an edge for TCU because they're getting better in a brand-new type of style, where Georgia Tech didn't change as radically as TCU did.
Last thing I want to ask about with regards to the NIT, we kind of talk about this in college football a little bit in terms of a bowl bounce, where a team – you know, gets a little bit of a perception increase going into the next season. There's kind of a negative connotation to the NIT. It's called the not invited tournament for a reason. Do you feel like, you know, either one of these teams are teams that you're going to look to back heading into next season because maybe they'll be a little bit undervalued, or do you feel like, you know, winning the NIT is a great accomplishment, but it doesn't really roll over any momentum?
Oh, I think it's a fabulous accomplishment. I mean, you look at TCU. TCU, the last 5 years prior to this year, 18, 11, 9, 18, and 12 wins. Now you have a head coach who wanted to come to your school. They've taken you to this, to Madison Square Garden. There's only six teams from power conferences. Well, actually five. You can't really count Gonzaga, but that are still playing. And now TCU has 23 wins, could make it 24 tonight. I think it's a huge boost for them. So, you know, and Georgia Tech as well. I mean, Georgia Tech proved, number one, they can win games at home. They pulled three huge upsets this year, Florida State, Notre Dame, and I think North Carolina, or that's just off the top of my head. So now you have something to gauge for next year. You can recruit saying, look, this is the steps we made. You can convince your kids, look, these are the steps we made. And don't discount the extra 2.5 weeks of practice these teams have got. You know, we talk about, again, I'm going to relate that to football. If you get to a bowl and you're allowed those extra practices, it just gives you such a boost for the upcoming year. The same thing with the NIT, CIT, and CBIs. That's why most teams, especially young teams, jump on the opportunity to be at any tournament, extra practice, extra work for their kids, get some of those freshmen in that don't play as much, get them practice time and let them see the court. It's a huge boost going into the following year in my mind.
All right. I didn't talk about this game with Brad Powers in our previous segment. I'll see if you have any thoughts on it. The CIT championship game between St. Peter's and Texas A&M Corpus Christi, both of these teams coming off of blowout victories in the semifinals. Texas A&M Corpus Christi now returns home. St. Peter's heads out on the road. St. Peter's 1.5-point favorite here in this one. Any thoughts on this game?
Boy, St. Peter's can play some defense. You know, I haven't jumped into this game yet, but let me take a look. I'm looking back at my offensive and power defensive. My numbers have St. Peter's the number 214 offense and my 57 defense. Texas A&M Corpus Christi is 206 and 209. So clearly my numbers say St. Peter's is a far dominant team with a similar offense and a far superior defense. So right there, without going into more in-depth, my initial reaction is I certainly like St. Peter's. Now, while I do the guide all year and I only publish the major conferences, line conferences. I do my power ratings, offensive and defensive rankings for every team the entire year. So that does give me a boost when it comes into these conferences that normally aren't, to have a little edge and have some work on those teams for the regular season.
The one thing I'd be worried about here in terms of St. Peter's is that they've got to go on the road to Corpus Christi, Texas, which, again, not really a place you would expect to go. But they were just in Texas a couple weeks ago, went to San Marcos, actually about a week ago, went to San Marcos and played Texas State in a 49-44 game. St. Peter's hasn't given up more than 55 points a game in this tournament. So that should be really, really interesting, and I'll be curious to see where that number goes as well. All right, Ralph, let's get into the Final Four here. South Carolina, Gonzaga, the first tip-off, University of Phoenix Stadium in Glendale. Gonzaga, 6.5-point favorite. As I talked about a little bit in the last segment with Brad, looks like we've got a sharp public split on this game. Sharper side being the favorite, public side being the dog.
Well, you know, coming in, I didn't make any adjustments to my numbers once the tournament started. Gonzaga was my number 2 overall team. South Carolina was my number 32 overall team. And in my rankings, Gonzaga had the number 9 offense and number 2 defense. South Carolina, the number 147 offense and 3 defense. You know, the whole talk of the tournament is really South Carolina's shutdown defense. You know, they held a very good Marquette offense to 46%. An incredible Duke offense to 42%, Baylor to 30%, and Florida to 42%. You know, and it would have been 30 if we just took the second half numbers. So the talk is South Carolina. Why? Well, those percentages are very good, but the scores are low. Gonzaga has actually played much better defense than South Carolina. Listen to these numbers. They allowed South Dakota State 31%. Northwestern 41%, and that was all in the second half when Northwestern get hot. West Virginia 27%, and they allowed Arizona 36%. We don't hear, we're not talking about their defense as much because they play more of an up-tempo game and their opponents get more shots. So while the scores are higher for Gonzaga, the percentages are actually much lower. So, you know, I think this is just going to be an absolute defensive battle. You add in playing in a dome that's not normally set for football. The sight lines are different. You know, we often talk about that when you get to the championship is, you know, playing that first game and adjusting to the shooting. This is a situation where I've gone back and forth on the side. You know, if the game is going to be in the 60s and you're getting 10% of that on your line with South Carolina, I can't bet into that. You know, I often look at a defensive dog, and if I'm getting 10% of where I think the number's going to be, you know, be it in the 70s, and I'm getting 7 or 8 points, or here if the game's going to be in the 60s and I'm getting 6 points, that 10% margin is something I'm not going to cross with an elite defense. But the total is something that I certainly am looking at, and it has potential to be an actual late phone play for me for the weekend. But I do like the under in this game for sure.
Gonzaga, you know, I mean, they're in the Final Four for the first time, but this is a program that has had a lot of success. South Carolina, like I mentioned, a couple of NIT championships in the mid-2000s, but no real success since that point. What about this long layoff for South Carolina where they're playing really good basketball? They look much better offensively than they have throughout the year because they were terrible on offense in a lot of those SEC games. Does this layoff really hurt them in a negative way, or does it help them because – they're going on this run that they didn't think that they were going to have. Now they can take a second, you know, sort of catch their breath and look at this and go, wow, guys, look at where we are. You know, let's put this thing together for 2 more games.
Well, you know, isn't this the why not us game? Both coaches said that to their players and their coaches, you know, why not us, you know, after, you know, I would say that South Carolina proved that's not a factor. You know, they went, they lost in the SEC tournament to Alabama in the first round. They had 7 days off before they beat Marquette. They beat them by 20. Then they beat Duke 88-81. They have 5 days off, and then they come back and pound Baylor. So they've proven to us, at least in this tournament, that the layoff doesn't affect them. So, you know, now going from Sunday to Saturday, you know, 6 days off, I can't say it's going to affect them until they show differently.
All right, let's get to the other game here. Oregon, North Carolina. Tons of talent, tons of athleticism, tons of excitement for this game. This game will clearly be the more bet of the two Final Four contests. North Carolina, 5-point favorite here for this one. They've been there, done that. Oregon's had some good teams. They haven't been able to get to Final Four weekend yet. What are your thoughts on this game?
You know, I caught the end of Brad talking about this, and my sentiments are going to mirror a lot of what he said. You look at the road Oregon, at the road Oregon went down to get here, and it was really an ideal situation for them. Rhode Island has no bigs. Michigan has no bigs. You know, Kansas only has Landon Lucas, 6'10", and then their number four is Josh Jackson, so they don't have any bigs. So they haven't been affected with Jordan Bell. You know, Brad made that great point about Jordan Bell getting a quick foul or getting a second quick foul. Hats off to him. They know how important he is. In the four games in the March Madness tournament, he only has three total fouls, never getting more than one in a game. So he's adjusted his play. So that's an incredible feat for him to do after, you know, he was averaging 3.2 fouls at the end of during February, during the Pac-12 season. So he's played very well. Now, you know, going up against Kennedy Meeks and Isaiah Hicks, you have a 6'9", 235, 6'10", 260. I give North Carolina a huge edge in this. Now, the question is Joel Berry. Now, Joel Berry, not only do you need Joel Berry to shoot threes, you need Joel Berry to drive into the lane to get the other guys open threes. He clearly is not the same. He didn't practice Tuesday. I didn't get the report yet if he practiced yesterday with both of his ankle injuries. So I clearly am on North Carolina unless Joel Berry misses a couple more practices and is not the same. North Carolina is a completely different team down the stretch because of Joel Berry. They have not been able to pull away and dominate teams. You know, we saw him get 92 against Butler and Texas Southern, but, you know, 72 against Arkansas was a battle. 75 Kentucky was a battle. And then, you know, losing to Duke and even Miami of Florida, they only got to 78 going back to the ACC championship. So Berry is the key. And without him being healthy, I am not going to back North Carolina. As long as he gets a couple days of practice in these last few days, and he's fine and he's running in the regular practice rotations, I have no problems backing him. But I am going to step out and make another suggestion on the total here. People think North Carolina is a sub-temple team. They're not. Even if Berry is back and playing, I think this total is way too high at 152. You know, Oregon is my number 20 offense. North Carolina is my number 23. Oregon's my 20 defense. North Carolina is my number 23 defense. Now, while North Carolina gets a lot of runouts because of their incredible offensive rebounding, Oregon doesn't take a lot of those wild shots to give North Carolina the opportunity to do that. So I like this total almost as much as the first game going under that number, under the 152.
Before we move on from this game and project some lines for Monday, where do you think that the side goes for this game? Do you feel like we see, you know, some sharp and public involvement on North Carolina? Do you think we get a 5.5, 6, or do you think we'll have some people that provide some resistance and do like the underdog?
You know, I think this goes up. I think this can even reach 6 by the time we get to Saturday. You know, it is North Carolina. It is a team that has been there and done that. It is a team that is on a mission after just, you know, after being tied with a few seconds left last year. You know, it's almost the New England Patriots against the underdog, and Joe Public is going to be on the New England Patriots of college basketball with the North Carolina Tar Heels.
All right, so we've seen that some recency bias and some perception bias has kind of come into play with some of these lines, so it may be kind of tough to forecast what we'll see for Monday night, but we're going to try to do it anyway. Let's say Gonzaga and North Carolina both hold serve as the favorites. What national championship line would you have for the Bulldogs and the Tar Heels on Monday?
you know, I had coming into March Madness, I had Gonzaga my number two team, North Carolina my number three team. Those are based on power ratings. I would make a pick. I would think the public probably opens North Carolina 1 or 1.5, just because of the been there, done that factor. Again, I personally, if I were making the line for me, it would be pick.
All right, now let's say South Carolina pulls the upset over Gonzaga, keeps this train going. Battle of the Carolinas on Monday. Where do you have North Carolina favored?
You know, I think you're basically going to see the same line you see now. You know, I think they have Oregon. I consider North Carolina and Gonzaga even. So if North Carolina's facing South Carolina, I'm going to keep it at that 6, 6.5. And likewise, if Gonzaga's facing Oregon, I'm going to make it the 5 that, you know, North Carolina has. So I'll keep them the same. I think they're identical. I think you could flop both teams and keep the exact same line, except if I'm matching up the two winners, I'm then going to give a slight edge to North Carolina because of the pedigree.
All right. And what about Oregon and South Carolina?
I'm going to make Oregon 1 to 1.5 in that game. I think that they're, you get to that quicker turnaround. You know, it's interesting that, you know, the coaching edges in college basketball, the first games in the series, you have 5 days to plan. Anyone could plan those. But so second games with those 48-hour turnovers that make it unique. But, you know, I've never been a Martin fan at South Carolina, not because he hasn't impressed me, just because he's never been on my radar. So, you know, hats off to the defensive effort. And anytime you have a defensive team, you're in a game. You know, your defense rarely goes in slumps. Your offense can go in slumps.
All right. So the last thing I want to ask you about here, and again, you heard the tail end of the segment with Brad. So you heard me ask this question to him. I'm going to ask the same question to you here. As we sort of look at and evaluate your college basketball performance throughout the year, and by the way, you've been exceptional on this show. So I want to give you some props for that. I think you've been a really tremendous addition to Bang the Book Radio. But in terms of grading yourself, in terms of evaluating your performance, what are some things that you may look to change or may look to incorporate a little bit more for next season?
You know, one thing I was afraid to do is expand the type of bets I've been using. You know, I moved out to Vegas and there's so many more opportunities out here, and there's so many different ways to make money as a gambler. And I haven't turned that into the handicapping side. You know, a couple things that I'll look at to do for my customers. And while everyone can't do it, I think we're getting where more and more can, either being here or having, you know, offshore capabilities. Half timelines. There are so many times that I look at games and you have a team that's a favorite, and if I would just split, you know, the units between halftime and full game, I hit a much higher percent this year. When I started tracking them, I was almost 6% higher. Hitting 54% to hitting 60% by playing favorites in the halftime roles. So we often see a team jump out, especially when you're at home and you get a home excited team. That's one thing that I regret not doing more of. Just because all of my customers couldn't do it doesn't mean I shouldn't spend the time that I think it's worth for me to play it and for the customers that can play it. You know, same thing with live betting. It's much harder to do, but, you know, a halftime text club is something I'll look at as well, where you see these halftime adjustments, and by doing a text, everyone can get it at the same time. And you can't really track it because some people can play it, some people can't play it, some people don't have the opportunity to play it. But I'm learning that it's okay to put out quality bets for some people, even though everyone can't play it. I've been hesitant to do that. It's basically put your plays out at a certain time. Everyone has the opportunity to play them. They have 6 to 8 hours to play them. You know, if they want to play them, they're going to get them in. But I'm going to close that market a little bit and make it a little more niche. And those customers that can jump on these opportunities, I think it's going to be profitable for them, very much so.
Great thoughts on today's show from Ralph Michaels from WagerTalk.com. Ralph, what do you have going on over at the website right now?
You know, just NBA fans, I know it's late in the season, but I just worked out some glitches in the computer. I do an NBA stat sheet now, which gives you the daily matchups and then the next day's matchups. And there's two things that I have in there that I don't think you could find anywhere. I have season-to-date, year-to-date numbers, and then I have the last two-week numbers, and then I have last two-week numbers home and away. So you look at the teams just in those situations, and the two things I have in there that you can't find anywhere are average scores and average lines. So you can take a look at, in the last 2 weeks, Cleveland's played three away games. What was the average score, and what were the average lines and totals for those games? It's free. Go to wagertalk.com. Take a look at it. I find it invaluable. I've just been doing it for a few days, and already it opens my eyes and it makes you aware. And, you know, one example tonight, I was doing the sheet earlier today. The LA Lakers are going on the road. I have blanks over the last 2 weeks on the road. Why? The Lakers, this is their first road game in over 14 days. That's something that you may not think of when they're playing, when you're looking at the Lakers tonight, but it's something that jumped out to me. So, something free, something easy to get. It's up daily, and I also put a free stat play in there and a technical totals play each day as well.
Oh, and of course, another good place is at CalSportsLV on Twitter. You can follow Ralph over there. Ralph Michaels from WagerTalk.com. Ralph, thank you so much for all your help here throughout the college basketball season. As I said, we'll talk sporadically here over the summer on that Tuesday Takeover show. But thank you for joining us each week, man. We really appreciate it, and we'll talk to you again real soon.
Adam, it's a great show, and it's been my pleasure being a part of it. Thank you.
Great stuff today from Ralph Michaels of WagerTalk.com. So we made it to the end of another show here. Let's take a look at the NHL market. You know, yesterday I said that I was passing. I didn't like anything from a full game standpoint. I talked about possibly taking a look at Wyoming in the second half, and that one came through. I talked about, you know, Pittsburgh starting to get a little bit healthier. They wound up getting blown out 5-1. I mentioned that I thought the price wasn't properly adjusted in that Los Angeles-Calgary line, you know, and Los Angeles winds up winning that game 4-1. I really didn't think Calgary was 15 cents better than Edmonton, and as it turns out last night, they weren't. So, you know, we were on the right track, and I think that's a really good thing to keep in mind here at this point in the show is if you pass on a day, let's say that, you know, there's just nothing that you like out there, still follow along. If you had some reads that maybe you didn't feel like playing, you didn't feel strongly enough about, and they still come through, that's a good thing. Yeah, it's easy to lament the fact that you didn't add to your bankroll by actually firing on them, but it's a sign that you're probably on the right track, that you're seeing things the right way. That's really important, you know, because you want to give yourself that reinforcement day after day after day. If you don't play anything, but you got some leans, things you liked, and they come through anyway, that's good. Yeah, you didn't win the bets because you didn't make any. That's obviously not a good thing, but it's still a good thing to know that you're on point, that you're where you should be, especially with how tight markets are late in the season. So I was taking a look at the NHL card here for today's action. I was going to initially throw out Carolina, who was plus 118, plus 115 area against Columbus. I do still kind of like this play. Now, we have lost some value on it, just the nature of the beast at the time that we record this show. You can still catch Carolina plus money out there at a few places. It's not a great spot for Columbus. It's not a Friday night. We've seen the Hurricanes play very, very well at home on Friday nights. But Columbus goes to Chicago on Friday and hosts Washington on Sunday. Those are two much, much bigger games for the Blue Jackets. Now, obviously, the number two seed still up for grabs in the Metropolitan Division. I don't think that they're going to catch Washington. But it's a tricky spot to go down to Carolina. The Hurricanes haven't lost in regulation in their last 10 games. They're 22-10-5 at home. It's a tough place to go play. It's not as tough for Columbus. They go there a couple times a year playing the Metropolitan. It's tougher for other teams. But still, you just don't get that same rush of adrenaline to go and play in Carolina. You know, the fan support down there can be kind of hit or miss. It's a long trip, sort of isolated a little bit. You know, it's just not a real conducive road trip for teams. With Chicago tomorrow night, I have to think Jonas Korpisalo plays tonight for Columbus. I haven't seen that confirmed yet or not. Maybe that has something to do with the line move, actually, now that I think about it. But I got to look at Carolina tonight, and I'm going to go back to the well with the Edmonton Oilers. This is the play I like more. This is the one that hasn't moved away from us yet. Edmonton's in the minus 130 range against San Jose here tonight. pretty interesting because this is about the same line that they faced with Los Angeles. It was about 5 cents cheaper at some shops a couple of nights ago. Los Angeles and San Jose are not the same team. I think San Jose is a much better team. So this number has been adjusted a little bit, has been deflated, so to speak, because San Jose has dropped six of its last seven, didn't play particularly well against the Rangers on Tuesday night. A few things I like about this game. A couple of things I don't like about this game as well. I'm going to give you all sides of the spectrum here. I'm going to show you how I'm breaking this one down and then give you the opportunity to make a decision for yourself. So San Jose picks up that win. They desperately needed it. They had dropped six straight. The last two were blowouts. They lost 6-1 to Dallas, 7-2 to Nashville, had a couple days off, played at home. Now they go right back out on the road to play Edmonton, Calgary, and Vancouver. They're going to make that Western Canada swing. I don't like that spot for San Jose. I don't like when teams stop home. It was the first home game in 10 days for the Sharks, and they go right back out on the road. You know, you get home, you get to see your kids and your wife, you get accustomed to that family life for a couple days, boom, you're gone again. Very, very hard for teams to flip that switch and make that adjustment. Now, for the Oilers, I've looked to back them pretty much every time that I can here against San Jose, both this season and last season. It hasn't worked out all that well this year. They're 1-2 against the Sharks. One and one against the Sharks here this season. But Edmonton's head coach is Todd McClellan. Todd McClellan used to coach the San Jose Sharks, so he knows this personnel very well. And I think his team understands that these are games that he really wants to get. Edmonton's won seven of their last eight. They've picked up that, you know, that second win that I talked about that young teams tend to get. The problem with this spot here for Edmonton is that they just clinched a playoff berth Tuesday night against Los Angeles. Very, very joyous occasion for them. This is a team that hasn't been to the playoffs since the 05-06 season. They do it at home, first year in a new building, emotional for those players for Edmonton, especially those guys that have been around for a while. But they knew that they were going to make the playoffs. It was just a matter of time. It was just a matter of putting that X next to their names. At this stage of the game, this is a team that not only has the chance to win to get into the playoffs, but has a chance to win its division. They're only 2 points back of Anaheim. Anaheim comes to town this weekend. This is a big-time spot for Edmonton. I think they're playing a lot better than San Jose right now. I do like them in this spot in the minus 130 price range. It would not shock me at all if San Jose wins this game. Edmonton's still young, still going to be some inconsistencies there. But I do like them quite a bit tonight. You know, they're fighting for that spot in the seeding. San Jose just not playing good hockey right now. You know, we kind of see it with a team like Minnesota as well, where you know, Minnesota looks like they've kind of turned it around a little bit, picks up a nice win, and then it just kind of snowballs out of control again for them. I don't know if that's the case with San Jose here, but I do know that going back home, being there for a couple days, heading right back out on the road, tough to do here at this time of the year. San Jose doesn't have that second wind in them like a young team does. San Jose is an older team, a much older team, actually. A lot of their key players, you know, 30, 31, 32 years old. Edmonton doesn't have that. So I think that Edmonton's in a very good spot tonight. One other game I think you can consider a little bit. Unfortunately, this number isn't where I wanted it to be, but I do want to throw it out there just in case. Toronto and Nashville. Nashville's a minus 140 favorite tonight. I actually expected this number to be a little bit higher, maybe in the 150 range. But I talk about this all the time where Nashville has such a tremendous home ice advantage. For those that don't know, and I've talked about this before, Bridgestone Arena is right down there on Broadway. I mean, it's right there, and in its shadows are the bars and honky-tonks on Broadway. So it's not an easy spot for visiting teams. The difference here for Toronto is that Toronto has several guys that can't even get into those bars. Mitch Marner, Austin Matthews, William Nylander, they're not old enough to get in. And you can probably say to yourself, oh, they're hockey players. You know, they can get in. People recognize their names. There are bouncers out in front of every bar in Nashville doing ID checks. So these guys aren't going to be able to have all the fun and do all the partying and drinking that some of these other teams do that come to town. So I think Toronto can mitigate a little bit of that home ice advantage. Now, I'll say this. This line at open looks like Toronto's getting a lot of respect. I know there were some people in the handicapping community that looked at Toronto earlier in the week and late last week and said they're just getting too much respect. That probably is the case. They're a high-scoring team. They're obviously the primary team in the market of Canada. You know, they're going to make the playoffs, hopefully for the first time in a long time. So, yeah, they are getting some respect. But I also think that they deserve it, too. We'll see what happens if Frederik Andersen can come back tonight. He's expected to play. That would be a nice lift for them if he is healthy enough to go. But that would be the underdog look I'm kind of looking at outside of the Carolina play. Would be maybe Toronto, because like I said, the home ice advantage could be mitigated a little bit for Nashville with the age situation for the Toronto Maple Leafs. We'll have one more show for you here this week. I'm not exactly sure who's going to join us. I'll kind of figure that out here as I go along throughout today, and then maybe even carry that over into the morning hours. But again, keep in mind, Monday, Tuesday, Thursday, going forward after this week. So hopefully you all understand. I know that some of you may be a little bit disappointed not to get Bang the Book radio content 5 days a week, but you know, there's not as much going on. It's good for me to get a little bit of a break. We have our guests that come on the show every week, and a lot of those guys, you know, are tailored to college basketball, college football, the NFL, you know, that type of thing. So, you know, it just sort of makes sense to go about it this way. But we'll still keep bringing you high-quality content as we go throughout the summer months. So I'll do it for today. Thank you so much for listening, everybody, and I will talk to you again tomorrow.